Welcome to My IVF Journey, a podcast of real stories from real IVF warriors by iGenomics. If you are already one or are a candidate to become one, don't miss our infertility conversations. Today, we have the honor to speak with Lindsay Corey about her experience, her journey, and her fight against infertility. She also discusses the importance of ERA testing and how it was critical in achieving her dream of pregnancy.
Hi, my name is Alyssa Snyder. I'm the VP of Clinical Genetic Services, and it's my pleasure to be speaking with you today during our interview, and I'm hoping that you'll share your story with us. So if you wouldn't mind starting just by telling us your name.
My name is Lindsay Corey.
Hi, Lindsay. It's such a pleasure to be speaking with you today. And can you tell us a little bit about yourself? How old are you and what do you do for a living?
Sure. I just turned 37 in January. I live in South Florida and I work at NCCI Holdings in Boca Raton, and I am an executive assistant.
Excellent. That sounds like a job with a lot of responsibility.
Yes, and I terribly miss the office right now. I'm ready to go back.
Have you been fully remote during the pandemic?
I have since March. Actually, I think it's a year this week or in a few days. So,
well, hopefully things are going to be returning back to normal soon.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about how you decided that it was time to start building a family and what that was like for you trying to conceive? How long were you trying to conceive before you realized that maybe this wasn't as easy as you thought it was going to be?
Sure. My husband and I have been together since 2004, and we got married back in 2017, and we actually started IVF about a year before we got married. Not to be like too TMI, but that's what this is kind of about. We always joke that we should have had a soccer team by that point. And it grows a little concerning when you have not conceived after, you know, kind of trying or just not being safe, we can say. So my husband went for an analysis and it turned out that he has zero morphology, which in IVF world usually means there's some doctors that will start you off with an IUI, but most will move right to IVF with ICSI because that's really what it's for, ICSI. I am also severe PCOS. So we were kind of like dueling heads in the night. Like it was just not, there was really not much hope there. Mm-hmm. In total, I've done 3 retrievals and 7 transfers. So our journey was definitely lengthy and tough. But we're done now, which I'm very happy about. I'm very happy to close that door. But
what was it like when you were experiencing infertility as a diagnosis? Like, was there ever a moment where you internalized that and you thought, oh my gosh, I am infertile or we have infertility?
Well, I have a lot of friends who actually never received a diagnosis. So I always found it very lucky that I actually had one, because when you have an answer for something, you can do things to try to help, right? If I didn't have a formal diagnosis, it's kind of like you're going in blind into this process. There's really nothing you can do except just be healthy and try to follow the guidelines here. With PCOS, there's a lot of tools out there. It's a lot of tools. And I had a miscarriage with my last embryo from my second retrieval. And after that, I was like, I'm done. I bought every book under the sun. I took every vitamin that was available. I did crazy diets. And that's when I got my 3 normal PGT embryos.
So walk me through the story. You said that you had 3 retrievals. Was that something that you were open to at the beginning, or did you just decide, let's just do one and then see how it goes? Like, how did that process evolve and develop over time? What was it like for you?
Well, I was extremely naive in the beginning. I think a lot of us go into this so hopeful with our first cycle that you think it's going to work right off the bat. Like, that's it. I had insurance coverage for my first cycle too, but that was it. So I was so dead set on this is going to work, and it blew up in my face, that cycle. It was, I think we only retrieved like 14 eggs, which for somebody with PCOS is a very low number. But they were horrible quality, and we ended up transferring on day 3, which my clinic doesn't even do anymore. They pushed to day 5. And none of them made it to freeze. So there I was with no insurance funds left and now having to find a way to pay for the next cycle out of pocket.
So it was, okay, now we're going to do another IVF cycle. And then what happened after the second IVF cycle?
So we took a year off. We got married that year. We decided just to kind of chill because it was a pretty catastrophic. You know, it was bad. I was really let down by that first cycle because I pumped myself up so much. So we took a year off and I retrieved 24 eggs this time. One made it to day 5. That was a failed transfer. And then I had 2 that made it to day 6. One was a chemical and one was a miscarriage.
That must have been really discouraging to get that positive pregnancy test and then to have a miscarriage.
Well, it was my chemical, which was the first positive pregnancy test I ever saw. And I think the unfortunate part about, IVF is such a blessing and a curse, and I say that all the time, but you get these positives time after time, and that joy is ripped from you. Because now, once you've experienced the chemical and the miscarriage, you don't jump for joy. You're like, oh, here we go again. Yeah. Like, you know, you go through these betas and these ultrasounds and you wait for the heartbeat and then it's the next, is the baby growing? And it's just, it's not normal.
Yeah.
It's not normal by any means what we go through just to try to achieve that goal of having a family.
Did you tell anyone that was close to you, a close friend or family, about your journey? Because I imagine that they kind of ride that roller coaster with you.
It was very open, very open. I would talk to anybody about it. I'm not ashamed of my infertility. I don't think anybody should be. In today's society especially, we need to be open about these things. This is a part of life. I wish everybody had insurance coverage for this. This is a condition. This is something that should be covered. This is something that so many families struggle with in private, and it's not fair. So I'm a loudmouth. Let me be the loudmouth about it, and I'll share.
What were the reactions of your friends and family? Was everybody supportive?
Yes. There's always a few that you think will probably support you the most, and they let you down, but that's your own expectations, right? But I think what's really important is the support of your partner, first and foremost, and I was very lucky to have that support, and my closest friends. And I also worked for somebody who was beyond supportive. I still work for him, but he's been a part of my journey since day one. And you have an appointment? Go. No question. Do what you need to do.
That
takes 1,000 bricks off the shoulders, right?
You mentioned insurance and that, you know, this being a condition. Do you think that if people were more willing to speak about their infertility journey, that that would be part of the process in changing insurance coverage?
Well, absolutely, because if you look at what's going on in the world right now, it's really about a bunch of voices, right, being heard and making change happen. I don't think this is really any different from that.
Yeah.
There's a prejudice against it that where it's like it's a luxury for some people.
Right. Elective. Oh. So Lindsay, going back to your treatment, you brought me to the end of your second IVF cycle. Take me to your third. What was that decision like to do a third IVF cycle?
So my husband, he's super sensitive and he sees what I went through with this and he was done. He was like, we are not doing this to you anymore. I see what you go through. I understand what the goal is here, but it's not worth sacrificing, you know, your well-being for this. And I'm like, one more, just one more. Let me do one more. And I promise you, like, this is it, because life needs to resume at some point too, right? I can't be doing IVF for 15 years in hopes that something's going on. And I'm getting older now at this point too, right? Age is not friendly in IVF world. So lucky for me, I have a doctor who not only supported me, but became my friend in the process. And it's almost like he made it a mission now. Like, this is happening. Like, we're going to get those embryos. So, like I said, I read all these books. I took all these crazy supplements. I came up with, like, my own plan. I was like, if these eggs are going to come out with, like, superhero capes on at this point, because I was so determined. So I miscarried in January. We didn't retrieve until June. So I really wanted to take the time for my body to get well. I cut out, I took all the plastic out of my house. No BPA. I mean, my husband's like, why am I washing myself with dirt at this point? Like, there was nothing with chemicals. But let me tell you, it worked. Wow. It worked. We retrieved 30 eggs. 20 were mature, 17 fertilized, and 3 made it to day 5, which obviously, I mean, you hear those statistics and you're like, I wish there were more. Uh-huh. I never had any that grew to day 5, though. I had one, and obviously it didn't work. So I had 3 that made it to day 5, and we were like, we're doing the PG. It was PGS at the time when I was in that, you know, phase. And they all came back normal.
Oh, that's really wonderful. The statistics wouldn't have predicted that.
Yeah, so I need it. You know, I'm a firm believer in quality over quantity, especially with eggs. But in my case, I needed quantity and quality.
Right.
I needed both. Needed both.
So it worked for you.
It did.
Do you have a baby now?
I have a 20-month-old little boy. The love of my life. Thank you.
What's it like being a mother?
Emotional. And I'm never going to say that somebody who went through infertility loves their child 10 times more, but there's a different, like, peace. Like, your heart feels so empty for so long. And I remember when I was on the C-section table and I heard him cry for the first time, I felt like people always tell you, like, you think you love him now when you're pregnant, but wait till he gets here. Wait till she gets here. And I heard him cry and I felt fireworks go off in my body. There's nothing like it. And I cherish every day, and I never take any day for granted that I am that little boy's mommy. It worked really hard for him.
It's making me tear up too. This really wonderful, passionate story. And I suppose that maybe one of the linings of the difficult journey that you've been through is that you really don't take it for granted, that, you know, you know just how hard it took to have your little miracle.
Yes, and that he is. Every day I tell him that.
Were there any surprises along the pregnancy or childbirth that, you know, because sometimes I imagine that, you know, IVF and fertility treatment seems like such a hurdle, and that I wonder if sometimes people would imagine that, okay, I just need to get pregnant and then everything after that will be easy.
Oh, yeah, it's easy breezy, right? So, no, definitely not. I had the oddest things happen to me ever. I caught this weird virus called Parvo B19 at the beginning of my pregnancy, which is one of the few viruses that will impact the fetus. I had a subchorionic hemorrhage at 6.5 weeks, and I bled till about 11 weeks. Wow. And it was massive. It was actually bigger than the baby, the hematoma that I had under the gestational sac. And then I had hydronephrosis of my kidney. Go ahead and Google that, because I had no idea what it was until I was actually formally diagnosed. Mm-hmm. And then I got preeclampsia at the end. So I would definitely say not normal, but you kind of roll with the punches at that point, because I think with your first pregnancy, you don't know what to expect. But to your point, it's like you go through IVF and all this struggle, you're like, this has to be easy, right? Like, look what it took to get here. Like, nobody's that cruel, right? Like, it has to be easier. No. No, definitely not. But worth it. I will say that.
And he told me something before the interview about one of the other embryos that was transferred. Have you transferred all of your embryos now? And what's going on for you now?
I will be 16 weeks pregnant tomorrow with our final embryo transfer. So that's very exciting. We have a little girl due in August. And
so you said that you had three normals. So you transferred one and that resulted in your baby. And then you... was there another one that was transferred that didn't take?
Yes. So before my son, we actually transferred our first embryo, and I had a chemical pregnancy with that embryo. And
so the last two are the ones.
My winners. My winners.
And tell me about the ERA. I understand that you did a test for phygenomics called ERA. What led to the decision to do ERA?
So when I first started IVF, the ERA test, I don't even think was around or it was being formed at that point. I had a girlfriend in Utah, actually, who I met through one of my like online support groups, who was one of the first trials for the ERA test. And she's like, you need to do it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't even have embryos that are good. Like, it doesn't even matter if I do this ERA. But it finally like came into Florida and my doctor was like, optimization, right? You throw everything you have at it. So I came back receptive, which is great, you know? And then I went to transfer that. And so mind you, this receptive ERA was about a year before we transferred the one normal PGT. So when I had the chemical with the PGT, we decided to do another ERA because I think any trauma that you have to the body or uterus is sure enough to shift something. I had the miscarriage that year. I lost a lot of weight before that egg retrieval. And sure enough, my cycle, my receptivity shifted 17 hours.
Wow. Okay.
And then we transferred my son and I felt him dig in. Like I knew right away. I remember where I was sitting. I was on a friend's couch and I was like, I'm afraid to move right now. Aww. Like I knew what was happening.
So you did a second ERA and were you now, you said your window shifted. Were you early or later than what you were before?
So I came back originally at 109 hours, and then my body regulated itself to the 125.
Okay. And do you think that's why you got pregnant?
With Owen, 100%. 100%. Progesterone's everything.
Do you think you would have eventually gotten pregnant without the ERA?
That's a tricky one. I'm going to say no, and also no, because I would not be willing to waste an embryo without doing an ERA, which has led me to this past year as well. So I'm a firm believer in the ERA. I know some people, like say like the undiagnosed infertility patients, they might not even know they need the ERA or whatever it may be, but in my case, there's one thing that I've learned is that my body's unpredictable in this process, and I don't trust my body in this process. So if I have a tool to know that I could put my head down at night and know that I did everything, why not do it? Patience is a virtue in this process.
So I think your comment about your physician wanting to, you know, I think you said optimization, let's throw everything at it, was an interesting comment. And that he was really a partner with you in your journey. Do you want to speak more to your physician or your clinic and how they supported you through the process?
Yeah, my doctor is Dr. Mark Gualtieri. He's at IVF Florida. He's out of Jupiter, but he also works in Wellington. And when I started IVF Florida, I think I was actually one of his first patients there. So we really started like our journeys, I guess you could say, together in this way. And he's not your typical doctor. His bedside manner is, you don't find it anywhere. You just don't. And I remember after my miscarriage, I texted him and I said, I'll never be a mother. Because I had no embryos left at this point. And you feel lost, you know? And he said a few choice words to me, but I will say the clean version of, oh, yes, you will. Oh, yes, you will. And that man drove to Miami and got me like the weirdest vitamins I've ever had in my life. I don't think I ate the days that I took them sometimes because my stomach was just like, what did you just do to me? But I was like, do it for the baby. Do it for the baby. Just everything. And, you know, I was a vegetarian too for 17 years. He's like, how do you feel about bone broth? And I was like, don't feel much, but I guess if you're telling me to do that, I will do that. So I did that. I did keto. You know, I just did the craziest stuff. And I remember I woke up one Sunday morning and I wasn't expecting my cycle to begin to do my retrieval. And I texted him. He goes, oh, girl, you're ready. Let's do this. Like, I think he was just as like, let's make a baby. Let's do this. We got this.
Yeah.
But he never left my side, good, bad, or indifferent. And I think that's what's missing in a lot of this as well, because it's such an emotional journey and you share so much of yourself mm-hmm. with this person that is helping you, you know, yeah. trying to achieve this goal. And
did you, when you became pregnant, did you graduate from his care and go on to a prenatal or an obstetrician?
I did. And when I graduated with my son, it was one of the most emotional days of my life because I've been under this man's care now for 3.5 years and I don't know any different. I had to find an OB. Like, I didn't even have an OB at that point, because I was like, I go to him for everything. If my throat hurt, I texted him. I was like, what do I do? And he's like... So, I remember, I just looked at him and I was crying and I just said, thank you. Sweet. And we stayed in touch, the entire time. And I remember when the night that Owen was born, I texted him and he's like, I'm an uncle.
Oh.
You know, it's just, and he met Owen when Owen was like 3 weeks old. That was one of my proudest moments, to take my baby to go see him and my nurses. And then it's funny because my husband and I were like, we're just having one. We're just doing one. So when I texted him, I said, I think we're ready. He goes, let's do it. Let's go. I'm ready. Let's go. So we never lost touch though.
So back to the ERA, you mentioned that you heard about ERA through a friend, I think you said, on social media?
Yes.
Did you bring up the option of ERA to your physician, and what was his response? Had he done ERA for other patients, or were you starting first for him?
He had not at that point, because I think it was just really being introduced to the clinic at that juncture. When I first brought it up, he's like, I don't think we're there quite yet. Because we really weren't at that time. Like, I didn't even have embryos, right? So it's a kind of like one step at a time. Let's get what we need to. Don't put the cart before the horse type of thing. So when I had I feel like I've had so many transfers, it's hard to even like piece it. But it got to the point that we were like, again, optimization, let's just do an ERA and make sure that you are receptive. Mm-hmm. Actually, yes, it was right before those 2 day 6, my chemical and my miscarriage. And both took, obviously, right? It just wasn't, they weren't quality embryos.
Right.
So.
What would you say is the hardest part of the journey, Lindsay?
The waiting. The waiting. You acclimate to hormones. At least I did. It just became part of my daily routine. And especially, I remember when my first IVF cycle failed, my doctor said to me, what makes you successful professionally is your biggest downfall in IVF. Mm. And I looked at him like, you got to break this down for me. He goes, you cannot control this. This is not something you can control. You can lead to water, but that's, you can't, you know, it's, and I'm a control freak. So that was a big lesson for me, learning to let go and just kind of whatever is going to happen at this point. I did everything that I could.
Yeah. That's a really important message, because a lot of people who are on a fertility journey are professional women who may have deferred childbirth for a while for their profession. Mm-hmm. So I can imagine that your advice and guidance to them would really speak volumes. Do you have any other advice to other women who are pursuing a fertility journey?
I mean, just don't give up. I feel like we have so many tools now to make this possible. And I feel like if you put the work in, I mean, it consumed me. It probably consumed me past a point that it shouldn't have, but I was determined. And it's about perseverance too. If you want something bad enough, you're going to make it happen. Mm. And I made it happen, and I made it happen twice. And I remember when I graduated this time, he looked at me, he goes, you did it again. And I was like,
beautiful.
So
the worst part is the waiting. time flows in a very strange way on a fertility journey. You've got things that happen on one day, and then your biological cycle goes for a month or so. Mm-hmm. And so you get the pregnancy test or the negative pregnancy test, and you have to wait another month. Walk me through what that's like, the way that time flows when you're on a fertility journey.
You ever see the movie Groundhog Day? With Bill Murray? Okay, so it's basically like you wake up every day and it's the same day. There's so much repeat. And I remember I finished my ERAs this past year, and it's like, we're finally ready for this FET. And then my cycle gets canceled because my lining was too thick. And I remember I just looked around and I was like, what is happening? Like, how could this even happen? And it goes back to, like, you just can't control it. Like, I have PCOS. Like, you said your cycle sometimes a month. Well, sometimes mine's 60.
Uh-huh.
And then I have to take something to make my period come. And guess what? That doesn't always work.
Wow.
There's just, and then, you know, you get that positive pregnancy test like I had with my miscarriage. And I got to 7.5 weeks. And the morning of my ultrasound, I started bleeding. And I stopped feeling pregnant like 2 days prior. And I think as women, we have, listen to that intuition. Like, we know things that, especially in IVF, you become so in tune with your body.
Mm-hmm.
And I had it was a blighted ovum miscarriage. So basically, and it's like, it's so cruel, this type of miscarriage, because your levels rise perfectly. You have all these pregnancy symptoms, and all of a sudden it just stops because the embryo ceased to grow so early on, mm-hmm. but the placenta is still releasing mm-hmm. what it needs to release.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to wait for that, right? So you can't, there's always, that's why I say the waiting for it was the hardest. Like, you're waiting for something all the time in mm-hmm. this process. That's a lot of sadness.
And it's your number one priority, and yet you can only wait.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Patience is a virtue, though.
Take me back to the ERA. Make it real for me. What was the procedure like when you had it?
So
I think you said you did twice. So tell me.
I've had six total.
Six ERAs.
I have six ERAs total.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. It is a lot. And I will say, before I had my son, it was not a pleasant procedure. Mm-hmm. But well worth it, right? You do what you have to do. I don't think anything is really pleasant in this process. But funnily enough, after I had my son and the four that I had this past year, they were not painful. I think there's something that changes with, you know, especially your uterus once you give birth. It didn't hurt me at all. So you do this mock cycle as if you were preparing for, you know, your frozen embryo transfer. And the day that you would transfer, you go in for the biopsy. So, I mean, I'm pretty sure I hold the record at iGenomics for having the most ERAs probably in 1 year. I would not be surprised. So
this is a lot.
Yeah, definitely.
So why did you do six?
So I had the first ERA, like I said, optimization, right? We just did it to do it to make sure I was receptive. The second I did after my chemical with the PGT. Mm-hmm. And then my third ERA, we decided we were definitely going to do because I had one embryo left, right? So you really want to make sure that you have nailed that exact receptivity window. And I always laugh because it's like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. She has like the three options in front of you, and none of them were just right. So the first sample that was sent in was too large. So then I had to do another cycle, and the next sample was too small. Then it came back with my next ERA that I shifted to 99 hours. So since it was more than a 24-hour shift, iGenomics recommended that we do another ERA. And I remember my doctor texting me, and I thought he was joking at first. I was like, you can't be for real. Like, there's no way. There's just no way. He's like, Lindsay, I swear, like, this has to happen again. And I was like, okay, we could do it. I could do it. That's fine. So I did it, and I was supposed to transfer in October. And I remember you guys worked so hard because I had so many ERAs at that point that you really needed to nail that, like, we needed to make sure, like, what the hours were at that point. And it was like 2 days before what my October transfer was. And I was calling you guys like every day, like, please just tell me I can't miss my transfer. They're like, Lindsay, we're trying so hard. I spoke to such nice people there. They're like, but we need it perfect for you. Like, we're not going to let you transfer with not the right time. But that's the FET that got canceled anyway, because my lining was too thick. So I was like, okay, whatever at this point. And then we got the answer, and I was actually receptive at back to 125. So I went ahead and I took a month off just to give my body time to like chill. And then we went ahead and transferred in December.
Yeah. What a journey.
That it was and still is.
So much disappointment in the beginning and throughout. Mm-hmm. And I guess the end is always a happy ending. And then that's why if you don't have, you know, you keep trying until you get the baby. But just, I'm really struck by what you've been through to get to your son and your current pregnancy.
Yeah. Thank you. It's been tough, but like I said, I think if we utilize what's, you know, the tools that are given to us, mm-hmm. I'm a firm believer that we can make it happen. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's my case, but how am I feeling now? Well, I will tell you this pregnancy has been nothing like my son. I was probably nauseous up until a week and a half ago. So that's been different. But I think when you go through infertility, you don't take anything for granted. And I almost felt guilty saying out loud, like, I don't feel well. Because I tried so hard to not feel well, right? Like, I wanted to be in this position. So, and I think in that way, it's a blessing that I'm working from home.
Right.
Because I take my son to daycare, and then I can kind of come home and sip on my ginger ale all day. But uh-huh. I'm finally in the phase that I'm like, my cravings are just not normal. So, Not at all. So I'm enjoying it now.
Well, I hope that you can give yourself permission to be pregnant as a normal person who didn't go through IVF would feel, and that you don't have to feel guilty for complaining about things. I understand that pregnancy can be challenging, and as you shared, your first pregnancy was not without complications.
Yeah, I had another hemorrhage, funnily enough, well, not too funny, with this pregnancy as well, and I bled with this one till about 12, 13 weeks.
Oh.
So, but besides that, I think one of my saving graces in this pregnancy is I have my toddler, right? So time moves a lot faster when you're caring for another human, right? So I look at him every day, and it's just, it's going a lot faster now.
Yeah.
Going a lot faster.
Bring me back to your partner, the dad. How is dad doing with his son and the current pregnancy? Is he happy about where you guys are today?
I think so. My husband works a crazy amount of hours to support our family. And it's so funny because I'm with Owen, obviously, like I'm his person. But when my husband's here, I don't even exist. Like Owen and his dad, my husband's Michael, are like frickin' wreck. There's no getting between them because dad's fun, right? And then you have mom who's the disciplinarian and structure and like, no, you can't do this. And dad's like, yes, you can. So there's that. I think my husband in a good way is terrified of being the father of a little girl. I think it's something very different for them, especially when you have this boys are boys, right? Boys are easy. And then you have this girl, and I'm worried about karma. I don't know how he feels, and I'm petrified. I'm sure he feels slightly the same way, but it's very exciting. I don't think we ever thought we would be here.
Yeah.
We truly didn't. So it's very surreal. Very, very surreal.
Well, congratulations on your success story and your tenacity and going through this whole journey. Are there any other silver linings that you want to share? Anything, any other messages you want to share to people who are going through this, to people who are not going through this? Any other messages?
Where there's a will, there's a way. I mean, I know a lot of people struggle with how am I going to pay for IVF and support systems, and there's so many variables of going through this process. Use your resources, talk to people, do what you need to do to make yourself feel okay in this process. Because if I didn't have my support from my family and friends, plus my support group that I'm involved with, I couldn't have gotten through this. It gets very dark. And there's no reason to have it so dark when there can be light. So really what I would say.
Well, thank you so much for your time and sharing your story with us, Lindsay. Really appreciate it. What an inspiration.
My pleasure.
Story.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Ladies, that was amazing. Like, phenomenal, phenomenal story. I'm still recording because they're at the end. They can edit through this. But, oh, my gosh.
I'm so emotional right now, Lindsay.
I'm telling you.
Thank you.
If you see something red in my eyes, you know, there's dust. It was, wow. Like, and so many parts of your story that connected and resonated through to so many people going through the experiences. Like from preconception to now, you know, you've conceived, you're pregnant, and all of those feelings that I can relate to directly.
Yeah.
On how it feels.
I think part of us, all of us can, right?
Yeah.
It's because people don't talk about it.
No.
Anybody that knows me, my husband always jokes, he's like, you can't say that stuff in public. But it's like, yes, I can, and I'm going to. Mm-hmm. Because it's real and it's raw, and this is the problem. We don't talk about it. This is so many women And I'm going to say women because, like, let's be real. Like, yes, my husband's part of it with me, but he's not doing the shots.
No.
He's not going through the physical trauma of everything. He's a support system for me, but they don't know how to help us sometimes,
mm-hmm.
partners, right? Mm-hmm. There's only so far that I think they can take us. And that's why, I'm in this support group and I'll never leave this support group because this is ingrained in me now.
I kind of wanted to ask you more about the support group. Is it an online support group or a local support group?
It is. One of my girlfriends started it on behalf of IVF Florida. And it was at first strictly just for patients of IVF Florida. So we formed this little like niche group because we all have the same doctors and it's very easy to relate to somebody who is in the same clinic as you. But now it's just blown up and her and I are both admins on this Facebook group. And I think we have close to like 1,000 members now or something crazy like that of women that just like search because you need an outlet. Yeah. And there's some crazy boards out there for IVF.
Like I'm part of a mommy group that I've had since my daughter was born. And it was such an outlet for when she first came home. And it was a group of us in NICU moms. Cause I'm a level 3 NICU mom and coming home, like my first day coming home, I came home without a baby. So that was a huge, toll on yourself psychologically.
Absolutely.
And then she didn't come home till 7 days later. And till this day, I'm still a part of my like NICU moms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the beautiful things about going through a process like this is like, what's the point of going through it if you can't help somebody else?
100%.
Right? So I came up with like these crazy concoctions to get my eggs good or to be healthy. And it's so funny. They've dubbed me in this group as like the egg queen. And I have girls that I've never even spoken to before messaging me saying, what did you take? What are you doing?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, here you go. Amazon links, like, order this now. Don't do retrieval for 3 months. It takes 90 days for anything to hit that ovary. Like, don't jump into it.
Yeah.
Again, waiting, right?
Yep.
So
90 days for anything to hit that ovary.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And I have a girl right now that's in my group who was like, but I took supplements a month before my retrieval. I was like, girlfriends.
Yeah.
Huh.
Mm-mm.
Wow.
So it's just, you have to, like I said, you have the tools, patience, like you have to go through it. I mean, and I love my wine. I love coffee. I love carbs. This is everything that somebody with PCOS should not be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So after I miscarried, I literally cold turkey everything.
You ketoed immediately.
Ketoed immediately. Yeah. And it was like, it was rough, but I lost 18, 19 pounds within that like 3.5 month period.
Wow.
And I remember I had my retrieval and I ordered like 6 boxes of mac and cheese off of Amazon because right after my retrieval, I mean, and I was like high as a kite, obviously, because I was on pain meds. I was like hyper-stimmed, like everything. 30 eggs is a lot. I came home and I just started boiling water and my husband's like, what are you doing? I was like, don't even talk to me. I am making Kraft mac and cheese. I am making the grossest stuff you can ever imagine. And I'm not talking to anybody. I'm literally going to sit on the couch and just spoon feed myself for the rest of the day. Like, don't even come near me. That's exactly what I did. And I don't regret it. I would do that all over again.
Amazing. So. Amazing, amazing story. Like, wow. And something that resonates with so many women that are going through that same experience.
Well, I think a lot of the times too, we don't even realize like we should have been pregnant by now. And my husband and I looked at each other like, there's something off here.
Oh yeah.
Right. And then he went for that semen analysis and it's so funny because he's like so clueless. God bless him. I love him. But like, he has no idea what's going on. And he's like, it came back great. Can I see it? And it's like his numbers are great, and then it's a zero morphology, and it's like, where do you see great? He's like, the doctor thinks it's not right. I'll do another one.
Aww.
And sure enough, he did another analysis and it came back zero again. So I always joke that his sperm had like dented heads, broken necks, and crooked tails. Like, it's him, right? He's walking around like, oh, I don't know what's going on. I'm like, your sperm is you. So with ICSI, you know, they hand pick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of the things with zero morph is that, yes, you can hand pick, but you also don't know, like, the DNA fragmentation can also be causing a lot of the issues with the embryo growth. And then you throw my PCOS into it. I've retrieved over 65 eggs.
Wow.
And I only have 3 day five embryos to show for it.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Oh. Hey, it's all good though. I'd do it all over again.
What was the, I should have asked you this in the interview, from the time that you had that first semen analysis to the time that you were, I don't know, when would you say that you were confident that you were having your first baby? After 15 weeks, 20 weeks, when were you like, I am having a baby?
When I was pregnant with Owen, you mean? Like, when did I feel good about it? After my anatomy scan at 20 weeks.
Yeah.
Because I bled so much. I had that huge hematoma under him. I was being monitored with this crazy parvo B19, whatever it is. It's called slapping face disease. It's what like daycare kids get. And I mean, I kept looking at the ultrasound, like, is he anemic? Is he okay? And my high risk doctor was like, he's fine. Relax. And I was like, no such. No such, but 20 weeks, yeah.
So many patients come into their 20-week ultrasound, like, you know, is it a boy or girl? Or, you know, can I see its face? And they just want baby pictures, and they're clueless to the fact that there's a reason that they're there, that the doctor's actually looking for something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I do have two kids, Lindsay, and my experience was a little bit more like yours, just being really risk-aware. I was like, okay, so is it okay? And they're like, yeah, why are you asking? Like,
right.
Because I know why you're looking. You're not trying to just show me baby pictures. Like, there's something that they're looking for.
It's so funny because they just called me the other day to schedule my anatomy scan. And I was just like, oh, my God. Like, let's just get there. I have an at-home Doppler.
Oh, yeah.
That I use like a crazy. And I even bought, like, professional ultrasound gel.
I had the same thing. You're not alone. I ran home, took my shirt off, and was just like, and we
every day. And I did it until I could feel Owen kick me. And I had an anterior placenta with him too. So he just kept kicking the placenta, and I never felt anything until like 22 weeks.
Oh.
So I was like, okay, well, this kind of stinks. But I feel her already, which is crazy.
Amazing.
Like, it feels like a little popcorn hopping. But... It's just wild.
Do you still feel anxious about your little girl, or do you feel like you're pretty comfortable that you'll have a baby?
Considering I've bought half a Pottery Barn baby, I'm pretty sure I feel pretty good right now. Her crib was actually delivered today. I stash things around my house now. So my husband doesn't like actually like realize the damage I'm doing here. I don't even know if he knows I bought a crib, to be honest with you. Like, I said to the guys this morning, I was like, just put it in the garage. But like, I have things monogrammed with her name already. Like, I have her crib mobile. I have a garbage bag. Molly.
Oh, I love it.
Molly and Owen. So we're just a little Irish over here. Just a little Irish over here.
That's awesome.
I have another meeting that I have to drop off to, but thank you so much for the opportunity to interview you and for your willingness to share your story. Really appreciate it.
You were really easy to talk to, so I thank you.
You're welcome. This is going to be the high of my week, month. I don't know. It's going to be going to carry me for a while. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. Would you like to find and listen to more stories just like this? Feel free to visit www.igenomics.com for more information.